This is the podcast for September 28th, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Margaret Thatcher Memorial Shame Closet, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
I almost want to say poor Joe Scarborough, but I can't bring myself to say that. So.
No.
It just amazes me, though, that, you know, if Margaret Thatcher was running this election, she would win.
Sure.
Okay, Joe.
I didn't know she was an American citizen, but okay. That's all right.
But there is this mythology that there is the perfect conservative out there who would save us. And this is what we're going to talk about today, because, frankly, the election itself is getting a little bit boring. I mean, just watching Mitt Romney screw up one time after another, and what's it going to be today?
Well, watching him almost literally run into himself.
Yeah.
Sprinting in the opposite direction 8 hours after he says, look at me, I did health care in Massachusetts, aren't I compassionate? He turns around and says, Barack Obama wants government to control your health care. That's monstrous. How could you allow such a thing?
Well, and I was just reading, believe it or not, Politico. I know.
Yeah.
But they pointed out, oh my gosh, look, if you really look at Paul Ryan's budget numbers for 2030, he's cutting Medicare. And when I say cut, I mean the same way that Romney Ryan are saying that Barack Obama cut Medicare. They are limiting the spending on Medicare from the years 2030 to 2040 by $1 trillion.
Yeah.
Well, that'll balance the budget 28 years from now. I know what we'll do.
Sure.
We'll limit Medicare spending by $1 trillion. Uh-huh. I'm just waiting for Dr. Evil to come in and say, I know.
$1 trillion.
We're going to have $1 trillion cut off of Medicare spending by that time.
Well, this is why it's so important to have a moon base, Blue Gal.
To
kick a can that far down the field, you need to do it in 1/6 Earth gravity.
I was just going to say, too, that I don't understand why Paul Ryan isn't being bold here. Why doesn't he say $1 quadrillion?
Yeah. A septillion.
Let's get some real savings in there, Paul.
Yeah. Well, and this is where Paul Krugman cut into him a couple of days ago and actually pulled the Dunning-Kruger card out of the deck. And said, look, I know wonks. Paul Ryan is not a wonk. It actually is starting to seem like Paul Ryan doesn't even know what numbers mean. He just likes PowerPoints and likes sounding bold and incisive, but his shit just doesn't make basic arithmetic sense. It doesn't add up. It literally doesn't add up. And he doesn't seem to know that, which is kind of terrifying since he is basically the entire brains of the Republican Party. From the economics point of view, since they have nothing else, they have no domestic policy, they have no foreign policy, they have no environmental policy other than global warming's a lie.
Well, and he was the perfect fluff piece for the Beltway media to have a both sides conversation.
Yeah.
Because he was good looking and fit.
Yeah.
And therefore,
he was bold.
Put him up, and instead of putting up Grandpa McCain or Crazy Sarah Palin, they had a new guy. It reminds me so much of when Rick Perry came to Iowa.
Yeah.
Now, we got this guy now. Look.
Yeah. Remember, let's commit the number one liberal sin of remembering the past.
Yeah.
This is secretly, boys and girls, why conservatives hate you. Not because of your tax policy or foreign policy, but because they have a secret conspiracy or secret agreement on their side never to talk about the past, because their past is awful. It's full of them shitting all over themselves and lying and getting the wrong wars and backing crazy people and being hypocrites and flip-flopping and the re-flip-flopping and the re-flip-flop. And they all agree among themselves never to mention that, which is basically what David Brooks did in his column. And the greatest evil liberals commit in their eyes is we bring the past up and say, this is what happened 2 years ago. This is what happened 4 years ago. And that is like throwing a bucket of water on the Wicked Witch. They can't stand that because that's unfair. Fair, because that breaks their secret gentleman's rule. But remember, the same bullshit press that declared Rick Perry the second coming of George Bush was the same people that declared the Iowa straw poll to be of vital national importance, even though they all said it with a smirk and like rolling their eyes like, yeah, shit. But it's the first time anybody cast votes of any kind. And the person who won the Iowa straw poll was who? Michelle Bachmann.
Yes.
And Michelle Bachmann did the full Ginsburg, got her, it was Ed Rollins was running her campaign at that time. And he hasn't been seen anywhere since then, by the way. Ed Rollins running her campaign, got her on all five talk shows or all four talk shows on the Sunday morning circuit. And then she vanished off the face of the earth, not because she lost anything, not because she said anything any crazier than she had before, but because the entire Beltway media decided over a cocktail weenies at Andrea Mitchell's house that Rick Perry was their guy.
Yep.
And they all flocked to him, and it turned out, oh my God, he's a moron. Oh my God. He looks presidential. Every time he opens his mouth, he sounds like, really, like he's brain damaged.
And he was on drugs. I mean, that's what
he was.
Politico, again, I hate quoting Politico all the time, but Politico's expose of the primaries pointed out that he was on painkillers. So, you know, and too bad for him.
Painkillers explains loopy behavior, but when you don't know which cabinet department you're planning on wiping off the face of the earth.
Well, and he was high. I mean, he was high during the debate, so.
Well, so high and stupid. There's that. Yeah. He's got that going. So he is like W. He really is, you know, abusing a substance, and he's a moron to boot. But this was their guy. This was the golden boy. This was the guy who was going to come in and really shake the thing up. And everybody just watched in, and I was feeling sorry. You said you don't want to feel sorry for Joe Scarborough. I actually felt a little bit sorry for Michelle Bachmann because she actually won the only vote casting exercise anybody had done to date, and the entire press just walked away from her. Okay, that's done. You've discharged our responsibility to technically cover what we told you was important. Now let's go play with this shiny thing over here. And I don't know. I'm guessing none of the people who have been doing this for the last 10 or 15 or 20 years has ever lost their job over it.
Absolutely not.
Has ever been held to account to it. In fact, the opposite is true. They keep getting promotions. Well, and I'd like to talk about Babe Buchanan.
We got to talk about Babe Buchanan because this was great. Yeah. Babe Buchanan was on Meet the Press.
And for those of you who don't know who Babe Buchanan is, give them a little backstory.
She is the sister, correct? Is she his sister? Of Pat Buchanan. She's Pat Buchanan's sister.
Crazy sister. She's the one who makes Pat Buchanan look normal.
Oh, I don't think she makes Pat Buchanan look normal.
Oh, yeah. She's really nuts.
She does carry the aura of a lady in the bus station talking to herself. I mean, she's got that kind of franticness to her.
Lady Macbeth without the guilt, you know?
Lady McChaney without the charm. She doesn't
want to wash that spot out. She's perfectly happy with that goddamn spot. But she's on television. She gets rolled out.
Because she has a paid position with the Romney campaign.
Exactly.
They've hired her.
Yeah.
So she's on Meet the Press doing her job. She is defending Romney. She is defending the 47% speech. She's defending health care, giving it back to the insurance companies. And all the while, she is screaming like her hair is on fire about how Barack Obama has destroyed America.
Now, and really, this is one of those cases where watching a few seconds of the video is actually instructive.
Yeah.
It's watching her literally panting with rage and flexing her claws. Mm-hmm. And I don't think she blinked once during the entire time when she was hunched over her microphone talking about the conspiracy, Barack Obama, destroy America.
So, well, let's be clear, too, that on the panel with her, this was a panel discussion. First of all, the moderator was David Gregory.
Yes.
The left was Deval Patrick and Dee Dee Myers, and on the right was David Brooks, and Joe Scarborough,
right?
And they're both on there, and David Brooks and Joe. Well, and you told me as we were sitting there watching this, you said, "Okay, now watch what happens. I guarantee you, David Gregory is going to read David Brooks's column to him and then ask him to comment on it. Like it's a stone tablet from Mount Ararat, okay?
Yeah.
It's just, hello, he's brought down these words from the New York Times, okay.
And then in 3, 2, 1.
And he did it. And then David Brooks,
your column in the New York Times said the following. What do you think about that?
Yeah, right. I do think that. I mean, if it's that simple. But David Brooks's column was about the 47% speech.
Right.
And saying that, you know, this is devastating. And Joe Scarborough has been, you know, had his face in his hands this week and so forth. But the fascinating thing about this show was Babe Buchanan said, I need equal time because it's four against one on this panel.
They're not real conservatives.
She didn't even have to say that. She wanted equal time for her crazy conspiracy, Barack Obama's destroying America, everything with Mitt Romney is wonderful. And the person that got in her face about it was Joe Scarborough saying, I'm with Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
I'm a conservative. Don't lump me with D.D. Myers because I'm a conservative. And it this is what we want to talk about today, which is this. We've talked about it before many times. The playing field on the right, the belief that fairness requires that we give half the field to the right-wing delusional politics, no matter how wrong it is, they get half. And that's what's fair and balanced.
And then the other half needs to be divided between Joe Scarborough and David Brooks and like Harold Ford Jr. Because that's the left.
Well, Deval Patrick. Deval Patrick at the moment, because the nation as a whole doesn't know a lot about him.
Yeah, and he did a fine job.
He's as much of a union-busting blue dog as, I mean, he's not a liberal. No.
But he did a fine job in that venue.
And in the speech. Fine. And in the speech to the convention, he did. And
absolutely.
He's turning into, you know, the darling of Chris Matthews loves him. And that's great. But when you start to look at the details of what he's done with Massachusetts, he's not a liberal. The fascinating part was that Babe Buchanan wanted, quote unquote, equal time against David Brooks.
And David Brooks' expression, as we allied slowly over to Mr. Brooks for a few moments.
Yeah, because I would love to talk about what he said.
His expression was that of a man who's used to dealing with someone like Babe Buchanan by throwing a quarter at her and then running for his car.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he looked like he was a guy trapped on the L with a crazy homeless person who was screaming in his face. He looked like he was about to shit himself, but he's required by the format of the press to treat her as a colleague, as an equal, as a peer.
Mm-hmm.
And he just shat himself. And the column he wrote a couple of days later for the New York Times. You want to talk about that? Is that what you're referring to?
No, I'm referring to what he actually – let's go back just and talk about what he said on the show. Because I want to smack him around the head and shoulder. There's a few people I just want to smack today, and one of them is David Brooks.
Please.
I have a quote from the transcript where David Brooks said, and they're talking about the grand bargain. You know,
right.
Quote, we're going to have to deal at some point, probably after some sort of national fiscal crisis. The Republicans are going to agree to raise the revenue. The Democrats are going to agree to restructure Medicare. They are probably not going to do it before a big national bankruptcy because it's politically hard. But that is the deal. And we're going to solve it sooner or later, but probably after some big national crises. And I thought to myself as I was listening to him, like, we haven't had any national crises since 9/11.
Yeah. And remember that whole economy melting down thing?
Remember the whole 9/11 crisis where the vice president as defense contractor ginned up evidence that the war needed to go to Iraq?
Yeah, remember us being lied into it? Well, that's the point.
And this is the point. We're going to have a deal at some point after a national fiscal crisis. If we have a national fiscal crisis, the banks are going to do what they did in 2008, which is gin up the game for them.
Right.
And this idea of the grand bargain. The grand bargain is not about deficit reduction, ever.
No,
I've said this before. I will say it till I'm blue in the face. It is about the bond market and making rich people happy.
Yes.
And don't let anyone tell you any different. It is never about deficit reduction. Paul Ryan does not balance the budget until 2050. No one cares about the deficit on the right.
And again, this is one of those. I do want to elide into Mr. Brooks's
go right ahead,
amazing bullshit column. By way of this, boys and girls, Republicans don't give a shit about deficits, and they never have. Because the reason I know is because they say so. Because Bush, Reagan ran up historic deficits. Nobody gave a shit about it. None of the base. Nobody cared. Blah, blah, blah. We don't give a shit. We don't care. Bill Clinton comes into office. Suddenly it's worse than seven Hitlers. Suddenly Alan Greenspan says, you know, that good shit you ran on, you can't do it because your predecessors, Republicans, left a giant, shitty, smelly mess behind that you have to clean up, Mr. Liberal. So get rid of all your clever ideas about healthcare reform, education reform. This is all stuff we've covered before in this podcast.
At the risk of repeating ourselves, I just listened to our podcast from April 15th of 2011, and we were saying this exact same thing. So I don't want to be repeating ourselves on every podcast, but yeah, the fact is the Republicans do not care about deficits.
No, and then Clinton ran surpluses, which no Republican believes anymore. No conservative believes that it's all a liberal lie. It's all liberal conspiracy, except for the fact that George W. Bush actually said it in speeches and his acceptance speech at the RNC. So shut up already.
Yeah.
Then W. runs, and so we have surpluses. Now W. runs up a second round of deficits because Dick Cheney said
deficits don't matter. Yeah.
Deficits don't matter. And then what happens exactly like Clinton? The reason they run up deficits, boys and girls, is because they want to kill Social Security. Yep. You want to be able to do it by saying, oh, we don't have any money. Yeah, we did until you fuckers went in.
In other words, there's going to be a grand fiscal crisis that requires us to take Medicare away from seniors. That's what they're talking about.
Because we engineered it that way.
Right.
And David Brooks goddamn well knows
it
because he really does know. Everybody on the right and the brain cast on the right knows exactly what the scheme is. It's to get rid of the New Deal. Get rid of the Great Society. Get rid of all those crappy programs that they've hated. Because the Koch brothers say, you know, we blew it during the Depression. We let all these programs be put in place. We have to get rid of them completely. And the way you do that is run up gigantic deficits that you never mention because Republicans don't give a shit about deficits. And suddenly the black man puts his hand on the Bible and deficits are once again worse than Hitler. This is why they're not allowed to remember the past. Because if they remember the past, they would put a they would have to put a sock in their mouth and go drown themselves in the river because their own hypocrisy is so clearly spelled out in the historical record. Well, here's the problem. The historical record doesn't exist. And all you have to do to know that is go read David Brooks's column from Tuesday of this week or read my own take on it, The 1001 Burkean Nights of David Brooks. David Brooks wrote an 800-word history of the Republican Party / conservative movement going back to his days with the National Review. But he divides the entire conservative movement into traditional conservatives who are genteel, kind, communitarian people who just want to take care of people on a community basis below the federal level. They want to have programs as close to people as possible, but they care deeply. They care passionately about people. And those are traditional conservatives, according to David Brooks. The other half of GOP, the other half of the conservative movement, are economic conservatives, Randites, tax cutters, deficit people like that. You notice anybody who's missing from this?
Yeah, Babe Buchanan.
The entire Republican base is missing from David Brooks' construction of the Republican Party.
Absolutely. And Babe Buchanan and all the crazy. Yeah.
He never once fucking mentions Jerry Falwell, Paul Weyrich. He never mentions Tom DeLay. He never mentions Lee Atwater. He never mentions the entire history because he can't allow that to be true. Because if that's true, then he's been on the bus with the fucking Klan for 30 years. And David Brooks can't face that fact about himself. So he has enough power and enough authority and enough immunity from any challenge from anybody. Just pretend it's not happening. And that's what's important to understand about conservatives. Wherever they are on the ideological spectrum, whether they're birchers or wingnuts or bigots or fundies, they all have three things in common. The first is they lie constantly about themselves and their own past. They have to. They can't face their own history. So they keep rebranding themselves as the Tea Party, pretending George Bush was never there, pretending they had nothing to do with George Bush. They lie about themselves all the time, which is why it is unforgivable for liberals to exist because we won't let them do it. Second, they lie constantly about liberals. The place where people like David Brooks hide out from the consequences of a righteous judgment against them that would smite them down tomorrow, and there are thousands like him, is in the center. Is in the both sides do it center. So they need liberals to be just as bad as they are.
And we should hat tip our listener who brought up a both sides do it.
Scott Brown.
Scott Brown today. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Brendan L., let's say, brought it up. And you want to
He just brought it up that Scott Brown actually said, you know, instead of responding to the horrific behavior of his staff doing racist tomahawk chants and chops and making fun of Native Americans, plus instead his own behavior. She doesn't look red to me. She doesn't look Indian to me. Yeah.
Instead of apologize for being wrong, which is what he was, and his staff were wrong, instead, what does he say?
Both sides should behave themselves.
Yeah, both sides should be respectful.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Fuck you.
This is where I say fuck a lot.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Fuck you fucking centrists. You fucking cowards.
Yeah, he's hiding behind both sides. And
this is where they hide. And
you
so
said strontium 90 in the milk. That's what Brendan was saying when he emailed us was, here's Scott Brown's strontium 90.
It's everywhere. Every fucking place you look and you find a conservative fucking up, the first thing he will say, go look at Marco Rubio's
when he was on the
performance
Daily
on the Daily Show.
He said it was seven or eight times. He said
20
sides.
Or 30 times. Yeah. And they're trained. They're trained like dogs to never take responsibility for what they said, never take responsibility for their own past, and blame liberals as much as possible. So number two, they need to invent liberals who are just as bad as they are. So they just make shit up. David Brooks does this all the time in the New York Times. David Brooks, this is really kind of important. David Brooks is the most prominent conservative intellectual in America. He is on Meet the Press, which is a powerful program. He's in America's paper of record, and he's on National Public Radio, and he's on Charlie Rose, and he's on the speaking circuit, and he lies all the time about everything. And he lies in a very humble way, in a very more in sorrow than anger way, but he lies all the time. And nobody ever mentions it, which is really creepy. Nobody does. Nobody calls him on it. Nobody points out that he's making shit up. Because if you're a centrist, you need to make up fake liberals, what we call hippie punching, to balance out the real atrocities of the right. And the third thing that all conservatives have in common is this impregnable narcissism. Because whatever brand of fake history they invent, the oppressed white minority history of Rush Limbaugh, or the failed humanitarian, communitarian conservatism of David Brooks, they always make themselves the hero of their own narrative. If only they listened to me. This is straight up Andrew Sullivan, by the way. Andrew Sullivan, who drives down the wrong side of the conservative road every day of his life and hits all these people coming their direction and wonders why everyone else is doing it wrong. You just can't understand why I can't believe these people are so apparently so bigoted. What's wrong with them? What's wrong with the right? My God, they keep saying these horrible things. What would make a person do such a thing? And it's because you don't know the first fucking thing about this country. You don't know the first fucking thing about conservatism in America. You keep wanting us to be a Thatcherite Tory conservatism, and you keep getting surprised when you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. But again, nobody ever mentions that to Andrew Sullivan because he has Tina Brown protecting him from any such criticism. And by the way, he doesn't take comments on his site, which means
it's not a blog.
Not a big surprise.
I want to interject with you our son's joke about the Civil War that he told the other day.
Yes.
We're filling out a word. Our son, who's 13 and is in eighth grade, is taking American history, learning about the Civil War. And they actually, to the curriculum's credit, started before the Civil War. They actually give it some context, and that's great. But one of the questions on his worksheet, because he just finished up a Civil War unit, was, based on your reading, make a prediction of what America will be like after the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And the boy, he just quoted a bumper sticker he had seen recently and thought was funny. I said, make a prediction about America after the Civil War. And he said, kiss my rebel ass, the South will rise again.
Yep. Sorry. It was a trick question. It was a trick question because, as we all know, it was the War of Northern Aggression.
He is always trying to get my goat by defending the Confederacy.
Yeah.
And then he says, you know, Mom, both sides in the Civil War were bad.
Yeah. No. There's some truth to that.
Oh, man. You know, the South just wanted to be free. Yeah, except for the slaves.
Yeah, except for that part. Again, there's a rich field of study in the Civil War, pre, during, and post Jim Crow Reconstruction, If anybody wants to read it, but it's all there in writing. It's all there. The Southern, the proto Southern strategy, how they built a religion and an economic system based on the bigotry and based on the self-deception and lies that you see absolutely playing themselves out. You know, this is America's original sin.
Absolutely.
And it's still there. Yeah,
and that's what Andrew Sullivan just cannot comprehend.
Wrap his head.
He can't read an eighth grade history textbook of U.S. history and figure out that racism might have something to do with why we are what we are.
Well, Andrew Sullivan's America extends from New York to Washington and back again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And occasionally up to the, you know, up to Martha's Vineyard. That's it. That's it. That's his. And like so many other Beltway journalists, that's the only America they know. So all they know of anything to do with the country really is are people they brush up against or talk to or reinforce them, who are snark with them or fight with them in that little bubble.
Well, and when you say that reminds me of something. I wanted to do a shout out to our fellow podcasters at Liberal Oasis, because they made a really good point about that on last week's podcast, that for the Beltway media that only knows that part of America, $250,000 is middle class.
Yep,
and
absolutely
it is
true.
Absolutely geographic blindness that they have to economics in the rest of the country.
Economics. So. Attitudes, how deeply held those attitudes are. I don't for a minute, and you heard me say a lot of mean things about conservatives and a lot of, I think, brutally true things, but I never doubt their sincerity. I never doubt for a minute they believe every batshit crazy thing that they say.
Yeah.
I also believe that they believe it when they reverse themselves and never notice the fact that everything they said was good about George Bush is monstrously evil with Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And
they
don't know that part of their brain just isn't there. But they're very sincere. They're deeply sincere. In fact, when talking to a formerly conservative friend of mine who I had to work on for years, who is now an independent and kind of, well, I get your point. I really do get your point. You make a good point. The hardest thing to convince this young man, this gentleman, a guy I like very much, the hardest thing to convince him was that the people that he was hanging out with on the right, people who listened to and called into Rush and voted and did all this other shit and said crazy things on the air and voted for crazy policies were really serious. He didn't believe they were serious. This is just something you say, you know. This is just a pose you strike. You don't really believe that evolution is fake, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't believe science is a lie. You don't really believe black people are conspiring to take away your money. You can't actually believe that shit. This is just the sort of funny, kooky thing that Rush says. And it turned out, holy shit, they really do believe all this stuff. And they believe it as gospel. They believe it down to their bitter little souls. And wrapping a liberal's head around that, wrapping a centrist head around that is the hardest thing to do. Because you and I could talk to Andrew Sullivan or David Brooks or anybody from that class for days. And you could come at them from every angle imaginable. You could be kind. You could be solicitous. You could be angry or snarky. It doesn't matter. In the end, they would never fucking believe that the people south of that Manson-Nixon line really are that way. They can't really believe this shit. That has to be a pose. It has to be fake. And that's how they keep letting them get away with it. That's how they keep tripping over their own dick in public. You know who knows that they believe this shit? Mitt Romney knows. Because Mitt Romney knows he can say whatever the fuck he wants. He can lie, 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 lie. And these people have all been trained to believe anything a trusted Republican conservative tells them is true, even if it directly contradicts what they were told yesterday. So he knows he has those people in his pocket. And he can make whatever shit he wants. The only thing he can't do is say nice things about Barack Obama or talk about health care. And that's a problem.
Those are the two things he's been saying, frankly. Mm-hmm. In the past 2 days, I mean, when he said Barack Obama didn't raise taxes in his first 4 years, I thought Paul Ryan was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was he doing with the healthcare thing last night?
He was at one point in the day. He was talking about how compassionate he was about how 100% of the kids in my state. I got healthcare for 100% of kids in my state. I got 100% of the kids in my state covered. Now, that's the kind of compassion I'm talking about. And then 8 hours before or after, I think it was 8 hours after, he was talking about the monstrous evil government takeover of Obamacare, trying to force politicians forcing you to, you know, I don't know, kill your grandmother or whatever.
Right.
And until you understand that he's talking to people who are robots. Mm-hmm. And he's also, this is another thing I do want to bring up, at least in passing, something that we also talked about. He is afflicted with CEO speak.
Yeah. Talk about that for a minute, because that's important.
I worked for a company north of Chicago for a few years that was run by a third generation family of rich inbred morons. They were prosperous because they were in an industry that was prosperous. But they didn't really like the fact that they had a lot of those people working there. And there was a very, very clear, bitter line between the old white guys who ran all the important divisions and the young people, the women, the Asians, the African Americans, and the college educated who were underneath them. And they talked very freely among themselves about their deep contempt for those people. Mm-hmm. And how they're going to shut the company down and move it to a suburb where they can get housewives who aren't busy during the day to come in and do secretarial work, because then those people can't follow them all the way up there.
Well, yeah, and customer service, they won't quit because they need the money for their car payment. Yeah, I mean, it's that simple, sure.
They already have to take two buses to get there. Right. But if we just move this, you know, further into the suburbs, they can never find us. Mm-hmm. And we can get rid of them.
Yeah.
And they talked that way, and they were stupid people. And what I remember distinctly, them finally being forced into a new president was hired because they, like inbred morons do, made very bad financial decisions, and the company was in trouble. They had to hire a real president who really sort of put them on the stage and made them answer questions from their staff. And their staff was asking them, you know, what about demographics? And the answer, as I recall, was, you mean geography? No, we mean demographics. And this business, you have to understand, it was all demographic driven. And the people up on stage had no idea what the fuck that word meant. And their seething contempt and feelings of great being oppressed and put upon by being forced to talk to the lower born, the lower orders of people, who they just blew past in the morning and blew past in the evening and thought contemptuously of most of the day, was clearly evident. And the problem that they had was they had no idea how to talk to people outside their little club of rich, ignorant white guys. So once they're in a sort of a mixed audience where everybody can see them and ask them and respond to them, they fell apart because they didn't know how not to talk like assholes. And that's Mitt Romney's problem. He's been the rich asshole his entire life. He's been surrounded by people who defer to him and say, yes, sir. No, sir. Whatever you want, sir. That's the most brilliant thing you've ever said in my life, sir. Oh, my God. How could you be more brilliant, sir? And now he's surrounded by people who are recording what he says and bringing it back to him 2 days later and saying, but you just contradicted yourself. Doesn't that sound suspiciously like a lie? And the look of bafflement on his face. Like, but this isn't how the game is played. That's not how we do things at the country club.
Yeah.
You're breaking all the rules. How dare you bring my past up to me? Don't you know who I am? And that's part of his affliction. He's a rich, insulated jerk who is trying to learn by osmosis and flashcards how to talk to normal human beings in real time. And it doesn't work.
I kind of want to talk about Eric Erickson for a minute today.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
God. I just want to smack him. I want to smack him as a fellow quote-unquote Christian because...
Eric Erickson is...
Red State. He runs the blog Red State.
Gigantic right blog called Red. And?
And he's also on CNN.
Hey, CNN correspondent.
And he...
Wingnut Welfare.
By the way, Red State has a headline today of Romney Obama too close to call.
Yeah.
So...
In height, that would be true. Yeah, you can hardly...
It's the delusion over there is really bad, but I did want to really get into for just a moment and get on my soapbox for just a moment about Eric Erickson's critique of Barack Obama's speech to the UN. Uh-huh. And to Eric Erickson's credit, he does publish an entire paragraph from Obama's speech and say, I want to make sure that no one can claim I took him out of context. Here's what Barack Obama says. And I'm not going to read the whole paragraph, but he's basically, Barack Obama says, it is time to heed the words of Gandhi. Intolerance is itself a form of violence and an obstacle to the growth of a true democratic spirit. Together we must work towards a world where we are strengthened by our differences, not defined by them. That is what America embodies, and that is the vision we will support. So any he makes, you know, again, I'm not going to be as good as Eric Erickson on this, and I'm just going to paraphrase, but basically he says, don't burn churches and don't slander the Prophet Muhammad. Let's all just tolerate each other's beliefs and not create wars over religion. That's what America embodies, etc. And so Eric Erickson takes that quote and says, but consider this. It is an Orthodox Christian belief that Muhammad is not a prophet. Actual Christians believe that Christ is the only way to salvation. Believing that is slandering Muhammad. That's just a fact. As,
yes.
As I said on Twitter, leave our bigotry alone.
Yeah.
And speaking as someone who spent 2.5 hours at church this morning, it bothers me so much, the lack of humility and common sense in the Christian world today. I mean, I know
it's almost
everywhere.
Blue Gal, it's almost like the Crusades were for nothing.
Well, that's what gets me, is that there is no sense that, and I just want, I can only speak for myself on this, Drift Class, but my own sins keep me busy 24/7, 365.
Yep. So glad the mote in your own eye, or your beam in your eye, Eric Erickson, has been completely removed.
Yeah.
And now you can busy yourself with fiddling with other people's faults and failures.
And who's a prophet and who isn't. You know, that's where we have to go to worry about getting into heaven. No.
Well, and there is a, you know, I mean, you and I talk about this because
pretty
we do talk about this stuff off the air.
Yes, yes.
You know, Christianity is a supersessionist religion.
Yeah.
It is for Christianity to be valid.
Christianity as the church has formed it.
Exactly.
Yes.
It has to fulfill Judaism.
Yeah.
It has to be the fulfillment. The only way it makes sense is by saying.
This is Ann Coulter's form of Christianity, which
right.
is, it completes you. We complete you Jews out there. And
and get on board or burn in hell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the whole history of the Catholic and later the Protestant Church, which I will diatribe on for days on end. But the short order has been in a state of constant tension between those who wish to tolerate and accept and include as part of civic society, in the case of Catholicism and later Protestantism, those of the Jewish faith, and those who want to eliminate them.
Yeah.
Because it is intolerable. You know, they must exist. They have to be here for my religion to be true.
Right.
I have to be the fulfillment of their prophecy.
And then they have to convert to my religion,
right.
or they will be punished. Yeah.
Or
that fulfills the prophecies.
It's an affront to me.
Yeah.
It's an affront to me. I am the fulfillment of your prophecy, you bastards. Mm. Now join up. Well, you know, there was a period when you had forced conversion, and then 20 years later, 10 years later, the church suddenly decided to get really paranoid about all those people who are now Christians. And were they really Christians? And now let's find those people and drag them out in the open and burn them or torture them. The church has been schizophrenic about its need to have people of the Jewish faith around to prove their point, and an intense desire to get rid of them, which culminated in World War II. I mean, culminated in the Holocaust.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's there are two or three times in history that the shroud at Trier was lowered. You know, the original Crusades took place in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Original
mm-hmm.
Crusades were killing Jews, you know, in Europe. So there's a really strong tradition of, no, we're right, and join or die. Fuck you. Join or die.
But I also feel like the white Christian, quote unquote Christian, because I hate using that word for them, but the quote unquote Christian conservative movement has taken all the N-word jokes from the 50s and all the N-word diatribes from the 50s and just converted them to Islam and Muslim and Obama. And so and so now we have the same kind of racism and the same kind of xenophobia that we have, you know, about commies and black people in the 50s. And now we're talking about Muslims and Obama, and it's just this need for the other to be
that we
need to be better than they are. And I just want to say before we I want to change subjects here for just a minute. But, you know, I don't know if you remember from church on Sunday, but the idea that when the disciples asked Jesus, who is first among us?
Yeah.
Jesus went and found a homeless street urchin and pulled him into the middle of the conversation and say, he is. This kid is. He's first. He comes before any of you.
I believe you're referring to Mark 9:30-37. Then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, what were you arguing about on the way? But they were silent, for on the way they had argued about among one another who was the greatest. He sat down, called the 12, and said to them, whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all. And he took a little child and put him among them, and taking it into his arms, he said, whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Person that was talking about that said, you know, we have to remember that this is not some sort of little blonde, ringletted, cute Aryan child that you see in the paintings in sentimental pictures of Jesus.
Yes.
Children weren't respected that way. And this was probably a homeless street urchin who was filthy and stunk a little bit. And he pointed to that kid and said, this kid comes first before any of you, and put him first. Number one.
Pair that with and again, this is a topic we shall now move on from. But pair that with, I believe, what Jesus, the man, the JC, the gentleman, said to the zealots: who is stronger, you or your God?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I want to ask Michelle Bachmann if I ever meet her. Which is, why is your God so goddamn weak that you have to be what you are? For him.
Shrill and terrified if anyone says anything that
differently.
And the thing about it, the United States, the thing about America is it was constructed by deists and Masons to be a tolerant
society.
Open
Absolutely.
Society where anybody can say anything they want and believe anything they want and respect each other and live in a tolerant and the fact that the people who wave the Constitution around like it's their personal dick.
Yeah.
And don't get that. Wave the Bible around and don't understand the Bible. Wave the Constitution around and don't understand
Think of the founding fathers and the disciples as exactly the same group of God-inspired people. Whereas Michelle Bachmann and Eric Erickson, you do the thing that makes Thomas Jefferson go blah.
And these are the people, the slightly more educated among them, are the people who read David Brooks's column, his fake magic history of conservatives, and said, yes, this is all true.
Well, I want to end this religious conversation on a funny note because Wonkett today uncovered a pajamas media blogger named Kathy Shadel, and Pajamas Media is conservative blogging people. Pammy Atlas is Pajamas Media. All right.
It was their giant attempt to replace the media, and it has failed rather conspicuously. Yes,
but she said, today's poor are often petulant, entitled, and irresponsible and ungrateful, caught up in a culture of crime and cheap thrills. Then this is direct quote from her. Jesus ordered us to love the poor because he understood how hard it was to do.
Wow.
Even 2,000 years ago. But in 2012, I'd take that further. Our quote-unquote poor have become the quote-unquote rich Jesus warned us about.
Yeah.
And I love what one commenter said, because her name is Kathy Shadel. Shadel, her head's made out of clay.
Very good. Hey, did she blow your mind, man?
Or as Wonkett said, Jesus, what a fucking idiot that I know so much more than.
Yeah. You know.
Oh, my God. She's Scrooge. These people are obviously lazy, you know.
Yeah.
People who work.
Yeah.
The 40% of people in deep poverty who work are lazy.
Well,
anyway.
Sort of 1950s juvenile novel rebel greaser language.
Yeah.
Bad boys from the wrong side of town.
She does have that kind of 50s again. They don't seem to have grown metaphysically since 1955, but that was very amusing. That's a funny article. I'll post that at the Facebook page.
And you know what? Let me just summarize that. They want to live in 1952 America and watch movies by John Wayne of 1890s America.
Right.
That's what they want. They want those two countries in Technicolor back. And they never existed. And I'm sorry, there's no more land to steal from Native Americans. So you can't have that. All the forests are gone.
But
all the minerals.
You can talk about whether they look white or not to you.
Yeah.
Scott
no
Brown.
More Irish.
Hey, look, she looks white to me.
No more Irish to kick around anymore.
Oh,
sorry. All of the economic levers, all of the low hanging fruit in raw material and despotic slavery and low wage, things, I'm sorry, tools that you had at your disposal, they're all gone now, and they're never coming back. So get the fuck over.
Speaking of never coming back, we got a tweet from Adam. We want to thank Adam for his tweet. He is at North is Up, all one word.
Uh-huh.
And he tweeted us and said, I hope your next show is all about how to use Bring Back the Refs as a way to talk about organized labor to football-loving centrists. And by the way, I am at Blue Gal on Twitter, and Driftglass, you are not at Driftglass.
No, someone got there first, a gamer who seems like a very nice person, but a heavy gamer. So I am at Mr. Electrico. That is at Mr. MR _ ELECTRICO. Electrico.
And Mr. Electrico is well worth following on Twitter, especially as we're going to have debates next week. Anytime there's some event, like an episode of Breaking Bad or a presidential debate, it's well worth following Mr. Electrico. He's very entertaining.
That's very ladylike of you to say there.
I'm working on a Photoshop on that right now. I've got a Gibson girl wearing a T-shirt that says, no, dude, seriously, fuck you.
I think he's confusing ladylike and lady parts. I don't think he...
Well, there's a way of shutting that down there, Mr. Aiken. We're going to shut you down.
I really think this is one of those cases where you just keep him talking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just pump him full of coffee. Make him, you know, read some Old Testament verses around his head and just keep him talking. Because and the thing is, okay, my ancestral home is Missouri. These are my people. And believe me when I tell you, there is no bottom to the crazy that Mr. Aiken's embrace of the crazy will delight at least half the voters of Missouri.
Yeah.
There just isn't. They are the people I know and love are stone right-wing Tea Party fundamentalist true
fucking
believers.
Well, I was going to say the fundamentalist part and the homeschooling part and the anti-science part.
Yeah.
And the anti-Obama part. And Claire McCaskill has not been the most responsive senator, let's just say. I mean, we all want every Democratic senator to be liberal. Mm-hmm. There's never going to be a liberal senator from Missouri. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
There will. After the Second Civil War, you know, once the nuclear ash has cooled and we begin repopulating it with, you know, civilized people.
All right. Let's not go there.
I'm kidding.
I've had to delete a couple people this week
from
different threads that I'm responsible for because the eliminationist rhetoric of, well, why doesn't he just go jump off a bridge? Or why doesn't he just end his life and make it better that way?
Yeah. No.
And
this was
stop it. Just
this,
stop it. We're
this
better
was a,
than that.
This
we
was
really
a place
are.
Where everyone needs to take a drink because that was a sly reference to a canticle for Leibovitz.
All right.
Yeah.
If you say so.
See how I
anyway,
hauled my ass out of that
back
one?
To this tweet from North is Up where he said, I hope your next show is all about how to use Bring Back the Refs as a way to talk about organized labor to centrists. And the idea that you know, we want professionalism in our sports referees, but not in our teachers or firefighters or EMTs.
Anything that screws up my enjoyment of sitting on my ass and drinking beer and watching TV, that's a bad thing.
Well, and I find it amazing, too. You know, we talk about this, and I've said for many years that you take the most racist person you know and give them a grandchild with a brain tumor and say the best doctor in the country for pediatric brain tumors is named Hussein.
Yeah, boom.
And he wants that guy operating on his grandchild.
Yep.
So, you know, at a certain level, racism and anti-union is just bullshit.
Yeah.
But I find it wonderful that karma came around in a way that the uninvolved, low-information voter could understand.
Yeah. Well, it won't matter. Ultimately, it won't matter. First of all, it's a game. It's a fucking game.
Yeah, and it's not taxpayer dollars that are going to pay for those referees.
Well, it kind of is, in the sense that taxpayer dollars pay for an awful lot of stadiums.
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know, the evil socialist government puts up the stadium so that you can watch billionaires.
So the Republicans can have a convention there.
Yeah. You can watch billionaires smash millionaires in helmets into each other. Couple three times a week, and that's fine. And everybody, I'm from Chicago. I love the Bears. I talk like the Bears. I got a eagle eye view the day that Mayor Daley decided to tear down Soldier Field to basically tell all the historic landmarks people to go fuck themselves, because that's what I do. That's the way I roll. So, you know, I understand football culture. I love watching, but it is a game, and the guys running around in striped shirts are part of the game. But there is something about – there's something at a crossroads there where you have something called referees that you don't have in politics. You do have it in other forms of life, but there's nobody in politics with a striped shirt running around saying that was your offside. That's a lie, 15 yards. I'm sorry. You know, that doesn't count. That was interference with reality. That's a 10-yard penalty, and we're going to give you the down. There's nobody like that in the real world. But the idea that people who in the abstract hate unions and hate minorities, but specifically in their specific case will make exceptions, this won't make any difference to them because they will carve out another exception. Mm-hmm. They like the idea. You know, if you talk to these people who hate unions, they like the idea of unions. You know, you say, what about the weekend? What about holidays? What about a 40-hour work week? What about no child labor? What about worker safety? And you just run through all the list of everything every good liberal knows about labor history. And the answer is, well, yeah, those were all terrible things. But they're all fixed now. And labor unions are just mobbed up, corrupt, awful, you know, machine, democratic, political, blah, 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 blah. And so they will simply make an exception. Well, yeah, when it's important. When it's not corrupt, when they're doing something vital like refereeing a football game, then sure, I'm for unions. And so you're never going to convince them that unionism generally is a good idea. What you can do is, if you're of a mind to be analogical, you can say, look, the unions are like dams. All right. The idea of a dam is not good enough. The concept of a dam is not good enough. You actually have to have a physical dam in place to yield all the benefits that building a dam gets. So you actually have to have something there other than the goodwill of companies and the memory of good labor laws to stop organized interests that are opposed to labor from preying on labor, from turning labor against itself, from driving your wages into the basement, from taking away your benefits, from doing all those things that corporations and large organized anti-union interests have been doing for 50 years. You have to have something there to stop them. The memory of something nice, the fond recollection of the good old days is simply not good enough. But, you know, forget it. You know, centrists are always going to find a way to blame both sides. Always. Because that's what centrists do. So I wish there were a good way, but I can't think of one offhand. Hello.
Hello. That's very good.
Are you knitting?
Yes.
Yes, we're that married, by the way. Yeah. This is the day, actually, that I burned my last boat.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't go back to Chicago. You have no place to live in Chicago anymore.
Me and Fast Eddie Felsen can't go back to Chicago. Look it up. It's The Hustler. Look it up. Yeah, it was some stuff happened back there. I can't go back. No, today is the day I close.
And you're going to make $5 whole.
I'm going to make
on your condo. We did get some alarmed emails from people saying, I hope he didn't foreclose.
No.
No, he didn't foreclose.
I'm making enough for happy meals for the family.
Happy meals for everybody. So
that's about it.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing to be out of it.
I'm so much luckier than millions of people who have lost their homes through bank sales or foreclosures or just walking away. I'm happier here. I'm married to the woman I love. I live in the Shire now. Gandalf has moved to the Shire. And I couldn't be happier, except for the whole part about not being able to find a job anywhere. But other than that, it's all good. But this, I'm not a home flipper.
You weren't trying to make money off of this condo.
I didn't refinance to use it as an ATM machine. I didn't do any of that shit. I played by all the rules you're supposed to play by. I worked very hard. I bought for life. I fought for good causes and still do. And it didn't matter. I still got screwed. But I got screwed less hard than millions of other people.
Yep.
And I ended up in a much happier, healthier place in so many ways.
And I mean, we really were bracing ourselves, too, for...
Yeah, to lose everything.
To have a major hit on your credit rating.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't put this... The house we have, we didn't put in your name until we figured out what was going to happen, because...
Stum on the whole...
Ankh Bay.
Yeah.
Don't some people talk have, about the Ankh Bay on the podcast pay.
Some people have Cayman Island accounts. We have, let's wait until this bad thing is behind us to put $7 in the savings account.
let's see if we can keep this minivan going for another year, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but again, we are blessed and highly favored, as the saying goes. We are very lucky people, and we know it.
And we know it, yeah.
So... On that note.
And on that note, we do want to thank all the new listeners who came on board. And we're not quite sure where you came from. We have our suspicions. But seriously, the podcast last week compared to 2 weeks ago is up over twice the traffic that we had.
And it's amazing. And last week was high.
Yeah.
And we were looking
at that was high. So we've doubled our traffic in a week. And I have my suspicions. You know, Sam Cedar was on Up with Chris Hayes a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And when you subscribe to Sam Cedar's podcast on iTunes, our podcast is suggested as one of the ones you might want to follow. So I think some people found us there.
Yeah.
Stitcher Radio has us as one of the top 10 liberal politics podcasts. So if people are scrolling through Stitcher looking for liberal podcasts, we are the first screen. And I think that has brought some traffic to us. And we have been blogging long enough to know that, as Driftglass calls it, morning hitwood. It fades and the day goes on. But we're very grateful to you. And I'm also grateful, Driftglass. I don't know if you checked on our stats. There were, 1,000 people who then went back and listened to the previous podcast. Yeah. So in the past seven days, people have listened to 2- and 3-week-old podcast, and we're just glad that people appreciate what we do and are listening. We're glad to have you on board. And what we're looking for in terms of support from everybody is we're trying to get 1% of our listeners to donate at least $5 to support the podcast work we do. If you're one of those people who's going back and listening to our archives and you have a job, I mean, that's really critical. If you're unemployed, this is our gift to you.
Yeah, don't sweat it. If you're unemployed
or a student or a senior on fixed
serving
income,
overseas,
we know. Yes, right.
Dude, if
when we get money from active military, I just die. I want you to know we have done that. It floors me.
Yeah.
Please know that this is our gift to you.
We're not talking to you people.
Yeah.
We're talking to George Soros, who's
having a hard time fundraising. He's on the phone for Priorities USA right now, and he's having a hard time. Poor George.
Yeah, as I mentioned, George Soros thinks George Soros is a cheap bastard.
And the last thing I want to say of a political meat nature to this podcast is that we really cannot underestimate, as Karen Finney said on one of the shows this week, do not underestimate Karl Rove's ability to steal this election.
Yep.
And that if we can be just as serious as a heart attack on that, we make jokes, and we make jokes about Romney and how he doesn't want to be president and so forth. There's plenty of people out there that want Romney to be president and are willing to steal an election to make it happen.
Yeah, and they're doing it right now.
I mean, Karl Rove's organization is challenging the registration of college students in Florida because they didn't put their dorm room numbers on their voter registration forms. So just take it seriously and register and vote, and we're done. We have to stop now.
All right.
Because this podcast is going to go out at 2 in the afternoon, and that's late. You can listen to our podcast for free at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, at our Facebook page. I'm Frances Langham on Facebook, on iTunes, and through our fabulous app available at the iTunes Store, which gives you access on your iPhone to both our blogs in addition to our podcast and Twitter streams. We're on the amazing Stitcher Radio, and we're on Netroots Radio from 6 to 7 Pacific and 9 to 10 Eastern on netrootsradio.blogspot.com. We appreciate your contributions, and again, we're looking for a $5 contribution or more from 1% of our listeners, which is we think is doable. If you have the money and you have a job and you have listened to archived podcasts, please consider giving us a $5 contribution. And by the way, we don't bother you except to thank you after your podcast. Your name and email doesn't go on some list where, you know, we aren't Barack Obama trying to take you to dinner. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at our P.O. Box. And that is the Professional Left Podcast, P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. Our email address is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. And every week at our website and our Facebook page, we publish a picture of an internet kitty. And we have a new internet kitty at our house. I have put a picture of him up at our Facebook page. The shelter, the County Animal Protective League shelter, called him Brock, B-R-O-C-K. But we both knew that that was a misspelling.
Of his original Klingon name, of B hyphen. B.
No, of Barack.
Because
let's face it, he's a black cat from Springfield. He's got to be Barack, right?
I'm sorry, B apostrophe R-O-C-K, which is pronounced Brock.
Brock. He's Barack Hussein, the Kenyan usurper.
Yep.
And definitely our other cat thinks of him as a usurper. But
yes.
She's
yes.
getting used to him very quickly. He's 17 weeks old, so he doesn't know rejection.
Yeah.
Hi, let's play. It's just
he constant. Still thinks he can change Washington from within.
That's it. That's really it. Anyway, Barack is there's a picture of Barack over at our Facebook page. He is not this week's internet kitty either. He's got to earn that right.
Yeah.
This week's internet kitty is named Sadie. And Sadie is a very well-traveled cat. Her human says that in her 14 years, Sadie has moved with us from New Jersey to Belgium to England and to Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And she's even got her own passport. So, you know, take that, Hillary Clinton.
The lesser known spice route of the old world.
Feel free to write us and be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you say otherwise. Thanksgiving weekend is our letters show where we will be reading your letters on the air. So feel free to write us. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, the internet kitties demand an immediate investigation into Scott Brown's idiot American heritage.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2012, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
I just got something from a friend of mine. I just want to check on it. It might be podcastable.
Okay. Late breaking podcast news, people.
Oh, jeez. What did he do?
Late breaking podcast news.
Okay.
You're hearing it live, ladies and gentlemen, live.
It's really good.
London is burning. No, not London.
When he spoke before the UN, Bibi Netanyahu had a diagram with a gigantic bomb.
I saw that, yes.
Don't talk to Bibi about the bomb. I said that last week.
Yeah.
And then he brings on the bomb.
Don't talk
about
the war.
It's not his bomb. He's talking about the Iranians' bomb. Don't talk about his bomb. Where's
Which
your bomb?
Which is weird, because I know a little bit about nuclear weapons, having drawn a lot of diagrams when I was in sixth grade with a lot of planes strafing, you know, islands and atomic explosions and shit.
Yeah.
And of all the ones I investigated, the fat man, little boy, and all the other variants, not one of them was ignited by a long burning cartoon fuse.
None of the nuclear bombs were Looney Tuned.
No. Acme does not produce nuclear weapons, as far as I know.
Oh my God! I mean, really?
Yeah. It's weird when, you know, the one thing you are absolutely not allowed to ask an Israeli prime minister about is the one prop he brings with him.
Yeah, right.
A speech in front
Where's
of the entire
bomb?
World.
Yeah.
How many nukes do you have again that you don't admit
and that you won't have inspected?
Talk about?
Yeah. And no one's allowed to inspect them.
And that nobody
international
in the American
community.
Media will ask you about?
Except that that's not true, because Zbigniew Brzezinski went on Morning Joe and actually counted them. Like, they've got this many.
Yeah.
No, we know that.
But that wasn't Zbigniew Brzezinski.
And he's not a State Department employee at this point. He's just an old man. Yeah.
That wasn't Zbigniew Brzezinski asking Bibi Netanyahu or any other member of the Israeli government.
Yeah.
What about your nukes? How many do you have? Where are they? That was him stating as a fact on a morning talk show. David Gregory has had him in a chair in front of him for, you know, a big chunk of time, as do most people in the American media. At one point or another, everybody, Charlie Rose, everybody has talked to Benjamin Netanyahu as prime minister. And the one thing you're never allowed to ask.
How many nuclear weapons do you own?
How many nukes do you have? How many nukes? Roughly. I don't care where they're deployed. I don't care how many. I don't care what kind they are, configuration. I don't care how you launch them. How many bombs do you have that would be considered nuclear by an honest broker of those things? Period.
Yeah.
And that question, this is one, and that's how you spot where control is kept.
Yeah.
You know,
what are you allowed to talk about and what you aren't?
Exactly. What do you fear for your life to talk about?